soccer matters.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
To Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro de Madrid.
Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Again, a reminder, Hugh O'Connor's Pub on I-10. That will be the home of the Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 Daspit Law European Championships. We'll be doing our next four shows live there. Right now, we have the honor and the privilege to getting on the U.S. Women's National Team coach. U.S. Women's National Team coach in town to take on Portugal. Jamaica will head up to Austin to take on Nigeria. He is Vlatko Andonovski. He joins us now. Vlatko, thank you so much for coming on.
Glenn, thank you very much for having me.
It's always a pleasure. Every time I do interviews with you, I go back to when you were coaching FC Kansas City and called the NWSL Championship in 2014 and 15 when you won it. Those were very good times and developing times, but fantastic games as well.
Yes, I mean, they definitely are games that I will always remember. It's part of my career and games that shaped me into the coach that I am. So those are good times.
Yeah, those two titles, I mean, those two titles brought you to the attention of many people in the United States, don't you believe?
I'm sure. I mean, you know how it is. You win games, you win championships, and you will gain some attention. But, you know, for me, I feel like that was just the beginning of the career, and I hope that even though now I feel comfortable where I'm at, I still have a lot to learn and a lot to grow. So looking forward to see what my career is going to look like years from now.
Head coach of the U.S. Women's National Team, Vlatko Andonovski. Three games in Texas, Vlatko. I know you got to finalize a roster here. How important, even factoring in the competition of Portugal, Jamaica, and Nigeria, how important are these games in the context of somebody making an Olympic roster or not?
The games are extremely important. Every game for us is important. We take it very, very seriously. We are commit to it from the preparation standpoint. I would say equally, regardless of the opponent or the rankings where they sit. So for us as a coaching staff, like I said, the preparation is 100%. But that doesn't it's not any different for the players. Now in terms of how important it is for someone making the Olympic roster or not, it is important because it's evaluating time, and it's the last game before we announce the roster. So some decisions will be made based on some things that we see in this camp.
He's Vlatko Andonovski joining us. You know, you got a champagne problem. You got some of the greatest women's soccer players in the world, although it's a difficult problem because you have a shortened roster of only 18 for the Olympics. Does that make you look at your choices differently? In other words, players that can play multiple positions, players that might be younger and can handle a short-term tournament like this. Does that factor into any of the decisions, Vlatko?
Yes, absolutely. There are a lot of things that come into play, and we have about 15 criteria that we go through when we're selecting player for this roster. And some characteristics or some boxes weigh a little bit more than the other, or some boxes a little bigger than the other. But a lot of them come in play. You know, starting from health and fitness, performance, durability, versatility in different lines, or versatility in the same line, to fit versus certain opponents that we known opponents that we already know that we're going to play, or special quality, how they fit in the environment. There's so many things that come in play when we're choosing the player for the roster.
How difficult is this? Look, it comes with the territory, Vlatko, but it's got to be incredibly difficult because the margins are going to be so thin.
Yes, it is. It's super difficult. It's first, it's difficult from the coaching standpoint because we want to do everything possible to make the right decision. And even though once we make it, we won't know if it's the right decision. We truly believe it will be, but we will not know until the tournament happens. So, yes, it is difficult from the coaching standpoint. But then I got to tell you, it's difficult from a personal standpoint is because I have a relationship with these players. You know, I like every single one of them, and they're all good players. It's not like, oh, you know, so-and-so is not good, so that's an easy decision. No, they're all good players. So I got to tell a good player that right now she's not good enough, and she's probably, if she's not 18, she's player number 19 in the country. So, yes, it is difficult. And there may be a player that we're going to have to call upon in 3 months or 6 months and then prepare for World Cup. So then I have to go back and tell the same player, oh, by the way, now you're going to be the future of our country. Or so, yes, it will be. It is a difficult decision. But for that matter, it's also difficult to tell an experienced player the same thing because we got to tell someone that's been 10 years on this team, oh, right now you're not good enough anymore. It's hard. You know, they're all good players. And, yes, the margins or the differences will be very small. But, you know, like I said, we're doing our due diligence. We're doing lots of analysis. And we're looking in so many different criteria to make the right decision.
Incredibly upfront stuff right there, Vlatko. I think anybody who's listening to this interview is really understanding how difficult it is to make the choices for this Olympic roster, only 18 players. Do you encounter different challenges now with the women and many of them now playing overseas in the ever-changing women's game?
No, I mean, you know, the ones that were overseas, actually, majority of them came back. So obviously, it was good for them. I thought that was a good experience for them, and then they went there in times when there was no women's soccer, the league was not going on here. So they capitalized on playing organized games, or they were in an environment where they can train on a daily basis. And we still have actually right now from the players that are in camp, we only have a couple that are overseas, and I think it's good for them. The ones that decide to come back, I think it's good for them too. I come from NWSL, and I truly believe NWSL is the best league in the world, and it's a great platform for players to develop for their more play on the national team.
Just a reminder for those listening, Vlatko Andonovski was a very good indoor soccer player. He was the MISL MVP in 2005, Defender of the Year in 2002, and he was an All-Star twice. So he was a player. And you, if I remember correctly, you were coaching the indoor league professionally, NFC Kansas City, at the same time. All right, so take me into these games, Portugal, Jamaica, and Nigeria. What type of playing styles, you know, are you going to have to break down the lower block defending teams? What are you looking to get out of these games from maybe the tactical side of it?
You know, we do lots of, like I said, lots of preparation and scouting on each one of them or on every team that we play against. But one thing that we realized, or I have realized in this short career that I have with the national team, is when teams are playing U.S., there's always something different. There's something changes. So, you know, we expect one thing from all these teams, but I would not be surprised if something else comes up. So for us, when we talk preparation with our team, we always prepare the team we're teaching them or educating them the game. So they're ready to make a change or make a switch 10 minutes into a game or 15 minutes or halftime, or make a switch or make a change a little bit easier. But we're also predicting what to expect from each one of those teams, and then we're preparing for them. Now, More specifically, Portugal, we're expecting them to play 4-4-2, diamond in the middle. They've been very, very successful with that, very structured, very, very organized. It's not going to be easy, especially in the midfield, obviously, with four versus our three midfielders. That will be an interesting battle, but I believe we're gonna do something to present some challenges for them. Now with Jamaica and Nigeria, that it will be a little bit different. I think Jamaica will sit a little bit lower with five in the back, and it will create challenges or problems for us. Slightly different than Portugal with compressing the central area of the field in front of the box, and then Nigeria, we expect lots of physicality, speed, and aggressiveness that will again be different than the other two teams.
Do you find generalizations now? You know, like on the men's side of it, it seems like there's so much of a pressing game, and teams are trying to do it in the attacking third of the field for longer time periods. Obviously, they're doing it at different times. You can't do it a whole game. But are there any real generalities in collective team play that you see occurring in the women's game at the international level?
I mean, it all depends on the team that we play, but not as aggressive in the press as in the men's game. In the women's game, teams are slightly more conservative. They're more of a middle block defending teams than anyone else. And for us, in preparation for the Olympics, I don't think we're going to see any, or if we do, we're going to very very few teams are going to be in high press mode because the Olympic is a very congested tournament, six games in 18 days, 95 degrees. It's not going to be easy to sustain a longer period of pressure.
He's Vlatko Andonovski joining us. He is the head coach of the U.S. Women's National Team. Really, really appreciate him coming on. 2 days from now, the U.S. will take on June 10th on Portugal. You just heard him talk about the way the Portuguese national team plays. 13th, it'll be U.S. Jamaica. June 16th, Nigeria and Austria. How challenging was the pandemic for you when it comes to, you know, the assessing of players and just all your normal duties, Vlatko?
It was very challenging. Obviously, living in times of uncertainty and unknowns, it wasn't easy. Mentally, it was hard. It was hard for us to do our job, but at the same time, I think that we were fortunate that we were able to do something that probably we were not going to be able to do if everything was normal. We were able to, as a staff, together with our GM and the director of technical development, to restructure a lot of things in the federation and to unify and align the system, everything from the senior national team all the way down to the youth national teams. So there were a lot of things that that we were able to do that probably would take a lot longer if everything was normal.
Vlatko, thank you so much for coming on tonight. We really appreciate how open and upfront. Real quick, when do you make those final decisions on that roster of 18? Does that come pretty quickly after these friendly games? When would that come?
Yeah, so the last game is on the 16th. The technical staff is going to spend a few more days in Texas together to recap the camp and to finalize the roster. So I would say a few days after the last camp is when we're going to start making the final decision, and probably soon after that announce it.
Vlatko, thank you so much for coming on tonight. We really appreciate it. Good luck in these friendlies and making these very tough decisions. We really appreciate you coming on tonight.
Yes. Thank you very much for having me, Glenn. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Yes.
And all the best to you.
It always is, Vlatko. Thank you. All right. That's Vlatko Andonovski, the head coach of the U.S. Women's National Team. You talk about tough decisions, right? You talk about having to factor in past history, status, if you're going to release some big-name players. It's going to have to happen, most likely. Got to go younger probably, right? Wouldn't you think? He mentioned that. Younger, short amount of time. Play differing positions. All right, we'll take a break here. We're going to come back with Houston Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan. A lot to talk about with Matt. Again, a big thank you to FM Kitchen and Bar. FM Kitchen and Bar is just north on Shepherd of Washington Avenue. You go over there. Great outside patio. Lots of monitors everywhere. Covered and uncovered. Lots of picnic tables. You can get spread out. You bring the dog. You can bring your kids. Great spot. Craft cocktails. Incredible food. It's a spot that is one of my go-tos all the time. I was over there the other day and got a chicken sandwich, and I also did a Cuban sandwich there recently. So there you go. It's FM Kitchen and Bar. Matt Jordan, Dynamo General Manager, coming up next on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm.
ESPN 97.5.
Hi, this is Oliver Luck, and you're listening to Soccer Matters on 97.5 with the irrepressible Glenn Davis.
Thank Oliver for that. I'll tell you what, Vlatko Andonovsky, what a great guy. I mean, to come on and to be that open and positive about his national team. This is Peter Tosh coming in hot. Great reggae song. All right. Welcome you back. This segment, again, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, our presenting sponsors of this show. And we get Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan. Matt, thank you very much for coming on the program tonight.
Hey, Glenn. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and I appreciate you being flexible and moving to the this time slot so that we could get on the U.S. Women's National Team coach. So thank you very much for that as well. All right. So
no problem.
You watched the U.S.-Mexico game. You saw Pulisic. You saw Weston McKennie. Are we going after those two? You know I'm joking.
I'm not sure we can get them, but I will tell you, you know, to see that game in my hometown, you know who I was most happy for was Ethan Horvath. You know, I mean,
yes.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but his father, Peter, is a well-known, well, he played in the MISL. You probably played against him indoor at some point. And then he is a famous high school soccer coach in Denver. And so when I was kind of coming up through the ranks, you know, Ethan was always hanging around. He was like a sponge, and you could just, I mean, and he couldn't be happier for someone, you know, with the performance he had in that moment in his hometown. It was awesome.
Yeah, to come into that game at that point was pretty incredible. All right, I'm going to shift it back to the Dynamo. So far, ahead of the break here, getting the games in that the Dynamo did with Tab and his staff. Thoughts on what you've seen so far?
Look, I think you know we've had a tough schedule, but I think we're very encouraged by the first eight games. You know, and the guys have been working hard, Glenn. I mean, I got to tell you, like in. And I think what it's been great to see is really the chemistry in the locker room. It's a really great environment right now, especially when you look at how many changes we made in the off season. And I think the other thing that's really standing out to me is just that Tab and the staff are doing a great job of, you know, very, very clearly, you know, implementing, you know, the system and style of play that we want, and the players are responding well and executing. Hasn't been perfect. But in saying that, I think we take away a lot of positives when we with this little mini break, and then you know we know that there's no rest once we get going again.
Talking to Matt Jordan, Dynamo General Manager here. Appreciate him coming on. Dynamo still on break here, training in this little hiatus, which I think comes at a very good time. Let's just speak a little bit about one topic that's out there, really on the Dynamo fans' minds. Teenage Hedebi plays in the Turkish Superliga. There's reports, there's articles saying he's signed. Is that a done deal?
I wish I could say it was a done deal. It's not, Glenn. But I mean, it's, you know, I traveled to Turkey. And that's the nice thing is I'm actually able to travel again. So it's nice to get back on the road once everything's starting to open up again. So it's a player that we're in very detailed and extensive discussions with. It's not over the line yet. But we're working on that every day. Good player. It's a position we've been looking for, a profile that we feel fits our system of play, and will also complement, you know, the other pieces we have. So I'm really hopeful to have more to report on that in the near future. It's not finalized yet, but we're working really hard on it.
That's good insight there. By the way, Dynamo 3-3-2, fifth in the Western Conference. We did hear Tab Ramos say that we were targeting a center back a couple weeks back. What other positional needs do you see as ones that are priority right now?
I think for us, you know, bringing, you know, close to 10, or I think right at around 10 players, you know, through the offseason. I mean, I think the real focus of ours, Glenn, is to let the group, you know, come together. We made so many changes. You know, I would say, you know, we're continuing to probably look at, you know, another attacking piece as well. So I'd say, you know, really center back in another additional attacking piece would be the areas of focus at the moment. I think, you know, we did a good job, you know, strengthening each line through the off season, and so I'd say those are two areas of focus at the moment.
He's Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan, Houston Dynamo, looking to make some moves here in the transfer window. That certainly is something that always gets fans very, very excited. You know, and this is a bit of a sensitive one, but where is the DP, Darwin Quintero? Where do you think he can go? I know Tab has mentioned, you know, he's got some fitness issues, trying to fight his way back into the team. Where does that kind of stand in your mind as a general manager in a differing way?
Well, I think, you know, as a general manager, you want to really focus on bringing in the pieces, you know, that fit really the style of play and the system that we're focusing on. I think Darwin is a good player, and I mean, he's an excellent player. I mean, he can do things that nobody else can do on our team. But at the same time, you know, when the team is doing well, you put yourself in the coach's shoes at times. You know, sometimes you don't want to just make changes for the sake of making changes, you know. But Darwin's had a good attitude. He's continued, you know, he's continuing to work hard. And I think we're all very hopeful and optimistic that he's going to be a positive contributor this year. And Tal will be the first to tell you the same. But, you know, up to this point through 8 games, you know, he probably hasn't got as much time as he would like. But that doesn't mean, you know, that he won't, you know, in the future. But again, he's going to have to earn it as well.
And don't you feel like, you know, the club and the decisions you're making, Tab's making, you're at a point now that, you know, you got to do some things that really is going to elicit change. I mean, like last year, it would have been really easy for Tab to just sit back in a low block and try to keep games close and try to win games. But he stayed true and tried to the system that he was implementing for the most part, which to me always looked last year as a long-term visionary move. Now I try to get the pieces I need, and we keep building this culture.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I mean, you know, Tab and I, you know, talked about that so often, you know, into last year, and really, you know, you have to stay true to what we're building, and I think that really set the stage for, you know, coming into this season and set the precedent, and, you know, and I think that's also been important, you know, with every decision. I mean, I think every guy knows, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, you have to earn it to get on the field. And I think that's held true, and that will continue to hold true. But I agree with you. I think that, you know, sometimes you take your lumps, but it's with the thought of, you know, continuing to build and set things up for the future. And so I think that was something that the staff did a great job with, you know, as we've been getting into the beginning of this season, and now we're at this point.
Yeah, sometimes the collective has to be the priority, not the individual player. How about and we're talking to Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan. This is a big one for me, the under-23 league. That's, you know, you got some young guys now that are going to have a hard time getting minutes this year just because there isn't, you know, that sort of quote-unquote reserve team unless you're fully loaned out. This under-23 league, give us an idea of where that's all going, because we hear a lot of things with the USL. Some teams are going to pull out of the USL. Where is that in your mind right now?
Well, I'd say that's something that we're working, real hard and very hopeful to be able to get up and running next season. There are some you know factors that still need to be worked through, you know, basically at the league level. But that's something that we really are we think is going to be really important, Glenn. I mean, right now, you know, we're in a little bit of a. I mean, again, we're just getting out of right now, you know, being able to get out of the travel restrictions, and so it's nice to see our academy teams are starting to train. You know, we have a lot of players that are now fully vaccinated in our pre-professional phase, so we're able to get back to moving players up and down. But that's really what we feel is the missing piece here locally in Houston. And you know, and we still have a partnership with RGV as well, and that's something that, you know, really that has changed and evolved this year, really in preparation for the 23s next year. And so it's something we're working hard on. And at the same time, we've also got, you know, Marcelo's out on loan, Eric's out on loan, you know, Juan Azucar, who we added to RGV last year, is down with RGV as well. And so that's a big priority for us right now, Glenn, is really how to get those guys in that pre-professional phase, you know, between really the 17s and the first team. You know, how will that 19/23s league look? I mean, that's a big focus of ours, and something that we're really working hard on. I mean, we actually just hired Tony Vigil, who is working with LAFC and helped them get their academy up and running. And Tony's role, you know, we just brought him on board literally this week. He's going to be our high performance director. Really, is, you know, big part of his responsibilities are going to be, hey, how are we going to accelerate the development of our high potential players, our HPPs? So, you know, Tony's role will be, you know, really hammering home our individual development plans, our individual training for those kind of standout players in that phase. And so we're really happy to have Tony here. So I think that gives you an indication of the direction we're moving things here.
And Tony, I believe, worked under Todd Saldana, my former teammate, who's heading up the LAFC Academy. We're talking to Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan. So if Nico Lemoine, I mean, could you do a short-term loan with RGV with him? Or does it have to be for the entire season? How does that work?
No, you know, with RGV, we're able to do short-term loans. It's a little bit, I mean, really, Nico has gotten some time here with the first team and gotten some minutes. And then, you know, really what we have to balance is the schedule. You know, the schedule starts coming, you know, fast and furious. And so guys like Nico and some other players, you know, we're going to be relying on the whole squad. So we haven't loaned him down, but we can loan guys down to RGV on a short-term basis. And it's a balancing act, you know, with that. You know, some of the players that we have loaned to other USL teams, it's not as much a free movement. So you really have to, it's a little more restricted. And that's why we're working so hard to get this 23 set up. So it's just, there's as much, you know, player movement and fluidity as possible. I mean, I don't know if you've been out to the sports park recently, but we're very close to being complete with a second field, which is ideal to have a first team and a reserve team training side by side. And I mean, you should drive out and take a look. I mean, the pitch is beautiful.
Well, I'm planning on coming down to practices soon now that some of the restrictions have been lifted. We're talking to Matt Jordan, the head coach. Sorry, Dynamo General Manager. I was making you the coach there. I think Tab would have something to say. You guys might be working together. And you are. So let me just take you back to the Nico Lemoine thing, though. Even if you did a short-term loan, it doesn't seem like Wilmer Cabrera now, with the relationship the way it is, he's not going to do things that will pull away from him trying to be a pro team in that town and winning the USL, right? It's not going to be easy for him to take a directive, and Nico Lemoine's coming for 3 weeks, and he has to play. That's not going to happen.
No, the dynamics of that partnership have changed. I mean, I've been in communication with Wilmer. We've been in communication with him, and I mean, we're really happy for them. They're off to a great start. You know, like I told you, Juan Azucar, who's a good player. You probably saw a USL goal of the week, the bicycle kick he scored last week, and that's a player that we signed, you know, last year that is down there on loan right now. But yeah, you're exactly right, Glenn. I mean, that's just the reality of the way that relationship has changed. You know, where we don't have technical control, There are still a couple other players that we're talking to them about loaning down, but the dynamics have changed, which is really, we value that partnership and we'll continue to have a partnership with them, but really also our focus is this U23 team here in Houston.
Matt, last one before we let you go. We're up on a hard break here. How important is it for the club to ultimately sell a player to Europe, ultimately bring more players through to the first team, and really see that come to fruition? Because, you know, teams are making sales overseas. The Sporting Kansas City sitting on Busio now. There's a lot happening. How important is that, and how much pressure's on to get those things done?
It's very important. We have sold, players, obviously, we're selling Alvarez, selling Moro, selling some other players. And we've had inquiries, to purchase some players on our roster currently. But it is a priority for us, Glenn, to continue to bring players through our pipeline, from the city of Houston, use this as a platform to then move them on to bigger leagues. And I think that's where the purpose of all the heavy lifting and the infrastructure and all the planning we're putting in place to position ourselves to be able to do that, because that is something that it's healthy pressure. It's exciting. And we believe that there's a lot of potential to do that. But you also have to have the right pieces in place to be able to do that. And so that's a priority for us.
Matt, great stuff. Really upfront. Really appreciate it. That's good stuff for the listeners. It's good stuff for Dynamo fans. Thank you so much. And continued success getting some of those deals across the line. Thanks for joining us tonight.
No, I appreciate it, Glenn. And thank you for everything.
All right. That's Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan. Good stuff there. Got some great answers from him. And we'll roll on here tonight. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, it's time to, Goalkeepers Union, if you're a goalkeeper or a goalkeeper coach, time to listen to a guy who has waited patiently to get his opportunity in Major League Soccer. We'll take a break. Soccer Matters, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. They're bilingual. All you got to do is call them. They are our presenting sponsors, and they are the ones who get it done here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. They are bilingual. All you do is call them at 713-322-HURT. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They'll bring you the personalized approach. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. Break.
This is ESPN 97.5. Real fun sports.
I'm Jordi Sunyer in Barcelona, and you're listening to Soccer Matters.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Big shout-out to John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They're going to work for you 24/7 nights and weekends. Thank you, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, for being our presenting sponsors and getting us on the air. Final segment of the night tonight. So the goalkeeping union, that's where we go with this. It's Austin FC goalkeeper Brad Stuver. Brad Stuver, much like former Dynamo goalkeeper Joe Willis, much like Tim Melia, getting his shot late in his career. Pleased to be joined now by Austin FC goalkeeper Brad Stuver. Brad, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we've been trying to get you on here for a while, so it's great to finally get you. So we appreciate it very much. I guess the first easy question is, you just take us through how prideful and how important that result was in Seattle against a team of that caliber in that environment.
Yeah, I think it was a great bounce back game for all of us. We were going against the top team in the West and historically a very good side at MLS. So for us to go to Seattle and after some of like a 3-game losing streak to come away with a point and a shutout, it was really good, and I'm really proud of the guys.
How did you feel protected in that game as a goalkeeper? Because it seemed like a very good collective defensive effort overall.
Yeah, I think collectively that was probably the game where I had the least amount of saves. And I think the guys in front of me all committed to defending and blocking shots. I don't know what the stats were, but I feel like Beisler and Julio blocked about 100 shots each. So I was extremely grateful for them that game.
Yeah, some key blocks in there. Now, there was one moment where Joao Paulo, the midfielder, hit a shot, and that seemed to be kind of dipping below your knees. That's always kind of a dangerous area to me. Tell me about that save, because when I'm watching this on TV, I'm going, that's a little bit more tricky and difficult than maybe it'll look like to everybody.
Yeah, those ones are difficult, especially on turf. You never know if the ball is going to bounce weird. You never know if it's going to hit the ground and skip. Luckily, it played more like grass in that moment and kind of skipped right into me. We work on that type of ball a lot. So kudos to Preston and the rest of the goalkeeping corps for getting that one. And was able to hold it and not give up a rebound, which I was very thankful for. So it was good.
Brad, is there anything you do differently as a goalkeeper playing on an artificial surface? I mean, is there anything even subtle that you might do differently on that type of a surface, maybe outside of distribution and the way the ball runs?
I mean, obviously my footwear changes. When we play on grass, I wear metal studs. So I had to switch into my firm ground cleats. But other than that, everything's kind of the same. Distribution is a little bit more difficult just because the way you plant and the way you strike through the ball gets a little bit different because your foot plants into the turf in a different way than it does in grass. The ball also plays a little bit differently. So you kind of have to test it out on the day. Everybody's turf is different. Seattle's turf is different than Portland's turf, is different than Vancouver's turf. So you just have to see how the ball is moving in warm up, and hopefully it stays that way for the rest of the game.
Sounds like you're talking about fine wine here, how these turfs are all very, very different. Tell me a little bit how different they are. Some of them are older. Some of them are more modernized. I'm sure that has something to do with it.
Yeah, and it all depends. I mean, Seattle, they have football that gets played on there a lot, so it gets matted down later in the season. Vancouver's turf is very short and almost carpet-like, so the footwear change and the way you move is really different. Portland has been historically probably the best turf that I've played on. And then different places have like different things. Some put cork instead of rubber. Some use rubber, some use sand. So it's all just seeing what they have on the day and getting used to it as quickly as possible.
He's Austin FC goalkeeper Brad Stuver. 78% of his passes have connected. He's got a 1.14 goals against average, 2 shutouts. And he has started every game. I think it's 630 minutes now. Okay, this Road Warrior thing, I would imagine, is probably getting a little bit old. We're getting closer and closer to the big moment of opening up the stadium and playing at home. Take us into overall how that plays on you mentally and being on the road in this situation, you know, flying in day of game sometimes. I mean, just take us through it, because I'm not sure everybody grasps that on the outside.
I mean, road games are always difficult in this league. It's something that other leagues don't have to deal with it as much just because of the distance that we have to cover. I mean, the Seattle flight was a 4-hour flight. Luckily, we got to go the day before because of how long the travel was. But still, 4 hours on a flight takes a toll on its body and takes a toll on you mentally. To be on the road for 8 games at the beginning of the season, you really have to get in your mind that you have to take care of your body. You have to recover on off days. You have to recover while you're on the plane, what food you intake, how much fluid you intake. So there's a lot of things that you think about differently than when you're at home, because when you're at home, you can sleep in your own bed. You can wake up whenever you want, eat your meals the way you want it. On the road, you kind of have to eat the hotel meals. And with the COVID restrictions, you're kind of in a bubble away from your family. So, I mean, it's been difficult, but I think the guys have done extremely well. And the support staff here have been great getting us what we need. And to have 7 points after 7 games is something that, if you would have told us at the beginning of the year that we would have 7 points after 7 games, we would have been like, wow, okay, great. But now that we're in it, we're kind of like, well, I think we could have more, which is also a good thing. We want more, and we expect more from ourselves.
Brad Stuver joining us. You know, it was funny after, I'm trying to remember which game it was, but it was when Manchester United was in the Europa League final and they brought Peter Schmeichel on, and he said he never took any information about where guys shot or any of that. The other goalkeeper back in studio was, no, 100%. I used all the data, the analytics. I thought it was really, really interesting because Schmeichel said, hey, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. What do you make of that? There are two different approaches, and then how much information do you take?
Yeah, I mean, goalkeepers are weird. I mean, I think that's a common consensus among everybody. But everybody's different. Everyone has their what they use. For me, I like watching penalties. I don't really go too far into it, but we have the ability to go back and watch the last 20 penalties someone takes. And I watch a run up, I watch where they go. And then in that moment, like depending on the score of the game or how tired guys are, you can kind of get an idea of, okay, if they're tired, they might do this. If they're up so many goals, they might do this. But like I said, at the end of the day, it's a 1v1 in that scenario and you're not expected to save it. So anytime that you can get a save, it's a win.
Brad Stuver picked up his second shutout of the year. No better place to do it than in Seattle against the Seattle Sounders on an international break as we do this interview. All right, last one, Walls. Walls, to me, have always been about negating possibility. But now when they start to jump, they add possibility, right? How do you feel about all of that? Because I find it interesting. And now we're laying people down behind the wall. I mean, we got all kinds of cool things going on here. Tell me about your thoughts on Walls.
Yeah, I mean, as we've progressed this game over the last 10 years, you get players that can manipulate the ball in all sorts of ways. People have been getting extremely good at free kicks, so the walls have become even more important. You see guys laying down so the wall can jump super high. You've seen players sprinting back to the near post to cover one side of the goal instead of the goalkeeper. There's a lot of different approaches to it. For me, I guess I would just say you put a wall in front of the player and you make them hit a fantastic free kick. For us, we want to jump with our toes down to negate a little bit of the underneath, but we also want to take away the over the top of the goal. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's make the attacker beat you. Don't overplay it. Don't overthink it. At the end of the day, if they hit an amazing free kick, they hit an amazing free kick, but make them be the hero. Don't try and give them anything else.
Brad, is it hard to hold back the excitement about finally opening up this just remarkable stadium that's around the corner? I mean, every time I look at it, it seems to get better.
Yes, I am very excited, and I live extremely close to the stadium, so I hear the fans doing their practices and their chants and hear the drums. So every day that gets closer to the 19th, I think all of us are going to be really excited to see everyone there.
Who are some of your favorite goalkeepers that maybe you've modeled yourself after or taken elements of their game to add into yours?
So growing up, I was a big Brad Friedel fan. He was from the same area of Ohio as I was, and I went to his like summer camps, so I watched him a lot. Obviously, I was a Van der Sar fan. I watched Casey Keller in Europe and when he came back to the MLS. And then kind of like what you said earlier, my time at MLS, I've really kind of looked at Tim Melia, Joe Willis, these guys as kind of role models. I mean, we're closer in age, but they're guys that have put their head down, got their chance. And when they got their chance, they ran with it. Didn't matter how old they were, they ran with it. So just seeing that they were capable of doing it gave me the belief that I could come here and do the same thing.
Well, Brad, you've grabbed the chance and you are running with it. It's been a pleasure watching you play this year. Real big thank you for coming on the program. Best of luck during the international break and continued training and getting prepared for the next game, which I believe is at Sporting Kansas City. So things don't get a whole lot easier ever here, do they?
No, they do not. But so, we're up for it. We're ready. Yeah,
I know you will be. Brad, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Yep. Thank you so much.
That does it tonight for Soccer Matters. Quick word here for FM Kitchen and Bar. Great place to go for food and cocktails. It's just north of Washington on Shepherd. Now, outside, they have a beautiful open area, all kinds of picnic tables, a covered area with monitors. You can watch everything. The Euros there, the Dynamo, the Olympics, you name it, you can watch it there. Also, all the games that are going to be down at BBVA during the Gold Cup. Get over to FM Kitchen and Bar. Great craft cocktails, great food, burgers, chicken sandwiches, salads, exceptional, and an area where you can bring your kids and the dog. It's FM Kitchen and Bar. ESPN975.com, that's where you get the podcast of this show each and every week. I have the pleasure of having the talented Aaron Raybould producing for us. I want to remind you again, it's Hugh O'Connor's out on I-10 in the Marquee Entertainment Center next Tuesday. For the next four Tuesday nights, we go live. T-shirts, jerseys, memorabilia signed, ticket giveaways. It's all going to be out there, plus guest hosts. Hit me up on Twitter and Instagram, Glenn Davis Soc, Facebook Soccer Matters. On behalf of the firm, I'm Glenn Davis. Remember, soccer matters.
ESPN 97.5.